Todd Rundgren is on the line. Hello.
Hello. That's me.
How you doing, Todd?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, man. We're looking forward to your show here at the Fillmore May 17th in Detroit.
So are we.
It's Todd Rundgren's Utopia. You live in Utopia, don't you?
Yeah, I'm out here on the island of Kauai, and you could say that it's as close to utopian as one could possibly get, weather permitting.
Weather permitting. I do have some family out there also. So that's where you are right now.
That's where I am here in the last my last moments at home, and then we start rehearsal in less than a week, and then we hit the road.
Hit the road. Well, you're definitely living the life, and also living the life being a part of Ringo's All-Star Band.
I was. Did like about 6 years of that, and finally had to part ways.
Had to part ways? Yeah. Come on, can you reveal why?
Well, you know, one thing is that Ringo hasn't mixed up the lineup in the band for a long time.
Okay.
And eventually he was going to do it, but he just enjoyed this particular lineup that he didn't have to go to the work to, you know, find other players. But, you know, after 6 years, it added to my touring burden to the point that, like, I was only getting home, like, maybe 3 months out of the year.
Whoa.
Between my own touring and Ringo.
That's tough living in Hawaii.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm, you know, trying to take care of my own thing. I mean, the time I would have spent doing Ringo, I'm doing Utopia.
Right. Exactly. We're in a conversation with Todd Rundgren of the new 104.3. You have many collaborations on your album, White Knight. Is it correct 15 artists involved with that album?
Well, I didn't actually do a count, but, I mean, there were two artists involved in some songs, and there were some songs in which it was still just all me. But, yeah, it was kind of a new approach for me. I'd spent a lot of time making the records all myself because I live out here in Kauai, and it's hard to just call people up for a session.
Utopia is enticing, man.
Yeah, but, you know, if I wanted Chasm to come out, it's like 5,000 miles. You know? By that time, I've lost the enthusiasm.
Well, definitely one of the persons on your album, Todd, was Daryl Hall, and you actually produced one of his albums, right?
Yeah, way back early on, before they started having their big string of hit singles, I did a Hall & Oates record called War Babies, and it was more or less a concept album, and there were no singles released off of it or anything, so it was the album that got him kicked off Atlantic.
Well, that's got to be memorable.
But they found great success after that.
I'll have to call my friends at Atlantic on that one. That's funny, but it looked like you had a lot of fun on Daryl's TV show, Daryl's House.
Oh, yeah, we always do. I've done it twice. We did it once up in Connecticut where Daryl's house actually is, and then, or was, I'm not sure. I think he's doing his shows from a different location now.
Okay.
And they were on tour in Japan and stopped in Hawaii on the way back, and we thought, wouldn't that be a great idea to do a Daryl's house from my house?
Yes, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, and a lot of people have seen that show. I mean, people who don't even know who I am have seen the show and stopped me in airports and talk about how much they enjoyed that particular one. So it's a little mini vacation.
Definitely. But then you go to the other extreme with Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, and you've actually worked with him before. That's definitely a different direction.
Yeah, but ironically, we're all from Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah.
Black and yellow.
Yeah. So kind of unusual, but not really that unusual. And Trent's, you know, you would think because of the whole Nine Inch Nails that he's like a really dark person and maybe, you know,
yeah,
scary to work with. But he's really, you know, friendly and easy to work with. And when I asked him if he had anything that, you know, I might be able to co-write with him, he sent me entire albums worth of ideas.
Interesting.
Hardest part was picking one out.
Wow. Talking to Todd Rundgren here. We discussed a bunch of collaborations. Tell us one of your favorites.
Well, I enjoyed actually getting together with Mo Berg.
Yeah, from Pursuit of Happiness.
A band that may be familiar to people in Detroit because you're so close to the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
But the only city north of Canada.
Yeah, they're south of the border.
And And we hadn't really done anything for a long time. He still produces records, but been out of the business. And I asked him for a song. And it was so kind of perfect in a way because
really?
Of the fact that I was an influence, early influence on him. And so he, like, puts his own thing on it and turns it back to me. And it just seems so familiar in a way.
Wow.
Even though we hadn't worked together in such a long time. The song with Robin was also a really great one. That one got a lot of attention because it was especially difficult for me to find women to collaborate with.
Okay, why is that?
Well, see, a lot of female singers, they all sing the same nowadays.
Oh, you know? Wow, okay. Todd, you're speaking your mind. You're a straight shooter.
This kind of level of hysteria or something like that, you know. And I wanted someone who was just a straight-ahead female pop singer, and Robin just kind of nailed it perfectly because she didn't do a lot of that sort of fancy trilling about and you know, what everybody's done ever since Whitney Houston.
You're a well-known producer also. Now, there's got to be an album from another artist besides you produce that gives you some sort of big-time pride. I mean, I'm thinking maybe Flint, Michigan's Grand Funk Railroad, We're an American Band.
Well, pride is not an emotion that
okay.
I usually indulge.
I get that.
But there are records that, you know, that were really challenging to make, and sometimes they don't succeed. You know, you really mm-hmm. sweat over a record, and then nothing happens with it. But Skylarking by XTC was just an incredibly difficult record to make, but it achieved all of its objectives. In other words, it revitalized the band and allowed them to continue for another 10 or 15 years.
Impressive.
So I'm happy with the way that turned out.
Okay, Todd Rundgren, who have you partied with the most while on tour?
Well, Ringo, you know, makes sure that he doesn't like it when people don't have fun.
Okay. I don't either. I mean, so.
he's allowed to have a fit, but we're not.
Oh, okay.
It's always fun traveling with Ringo because we did it in kind of grand style, you know, charter jet everywhere. And
nice.
So you feel almost like the Beatles. And, you know, the band got along really well with each other. You know, we would go to movies together and go to dinner together and stuff. So
love it.
Was a real fun time, and I'll miss it in a way, but I won't miss playing the same set every night for 6 years.
Well, you know, you played all the instruments on the song Bang the Drum All Day, and I got to ask you, it's kind of our at-work theme song. Can you tell me what inspired that song?
The funny thing is, when I'm working on a record, sometimes my brain goes into automatic mode, and I dreamed that song. I was working on a record at the time. I think it was the Ever Popular Tortured Artist Effect, and I woke up at like 3 in the morning with this song in my head and immediately went down and recording it, not really having any idea what it meant or where it came from.
Uh-huh.
I thought, oh, it's like a fun exercise in ska music or something like that, and the label didn't put it out as a single or anything. It just started to catch on its own, first at like sporting events, like hockey games and things like that.
And then radio jumped all over it.
And then it became the drive time anthem that, you know, that I think you're indicating. You know,
mm-hmm.
DJ started playing it every Friday.
Yeah.
And then it became, you know, kind of a party anthem, and I wound up getting incredible licensing money from, like, Carnival Cruise Lines before they started sinking all their boats and stuff. But you know, I became the theme song of Carnival Cruise Lines. They could have retired on that, you know.
I love that. As you're invading Detroit on May 17th, do you have any memories created here?
Well, we used to, you know, in the early days of Utopia, my early days, we used to get to Detroit a lot more, you know, and since mm-hmm. then, you know, the whole downtown area of Detroit went through kind of a period of depression, and now it's starting to come back.
Absolutely.
So we have a lot of memories of playing Detroit area, you know, Royal Oak Theater. What's the big outdoor gig there, you know?
It was Pine Knob. Now it's DTE.
Yeah, but it used to be called Pine Knob. We would do Pine Knob all the time. So often when we would get to Detroit, we wouldn't actually be in downtown Detroit. We'd be mm-hmm. in the Detroit area. But now, you know, things are coming back. I did a gig not too long ago, a couple of years ago, in a really beautiful theater downtown promoted actually by fans because they were so frustrated that I never played Detroit.
Love that.
So, so we're coming back and going to enjoy the old Detroit downtown once again.
Todd, I got to ask you this. In my recent conversation with Carlos Santana, he mentioned healing frequencies of music. I'm sure you see how music affects your fans.
Well, you kind of can tell what works, but I tend to do music for my own reasons.
Okay.
You know, like if I get bored with what I'm doing, I'll go out and start trying to absorb new influences and things like that. And the fans often find that, you know, what I do is not immediately familiar to them. It may take them a little while to catch on to. But most of them have been with me for so long that they're used to that process. They realize that they'll listen to the record and it won't all connect the first time. And then, you know, maybe the second or third time it starts to sink in and it starts to connect. And then after a while, they start to have favorite songs and those songs will become regular parts of the show. So it isn't the same as, like, you know, releasing a big hit record and everyone jumps on it and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slowly developing organic relationship between me and my audience.
That's a beautiful thing. You know, as we're talking about that, you know, you're a multimedia megastar. What would a next generation person seeing you for the first time in concert be surprised to experience?
Well, I think that a lot of people are surprised at the energy level that we still put out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, when they get to, you know, to my age and the age of mostly guys in my band, which is around 7 decades.
Okay.
You know, yeah, most people start to take it easy. But for me, you know, it's just my principal form of exercise. It's how I avoid getting old, you know, is
yep.
to get on stage and jump around and, you know, and expend as much energy as I can in a 2-hour period. And a lot of people don't expect that from a 70-year-old.
I tell you what, at the Fillmore on May 17th, you're definitely going to provide a unique energy. What would you like to throw out to your fans listening right now?
Well, you know, it's been a long time, and now that we're going to do this, I want you to stop pestering me about it.
And just show up.
I don't want somebody coming up to me a year from now and says, when did you tell me you're going to reform?
Todd, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for taking the time.
Terrific, and we'll see you in Detroit.